Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Collect, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Mon Dieu department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Huh?
Well, I'm sure you've heard the news that GM is going to partner with none other than our pals, Peugeot. Allons au fond de la patrie. Sorry.
Mon Dieu!
You see, I guess they want to tap into Peugeot's expertise in making quirky, unfixable cars.
Sure.
And I actually think it bodes well for future GM products. I really do.
You do?
Well, for example, here are a few of the things that I'm pretty sure that the Peugeot partnership will bring to GM vehicles.
Like what?
Well, horns will be replaced by mimes who silently act out road rage at bad drivers. That's a very French thing. Side view mirrors will soon say objects in mirror may or may not exist.
Oh!
The new car smell will contain notes of stale cigarettes, pungent cheese, and underarm odor. In gratitude, Peugeot's going to agree to build a major manufacturing plant in the U.S. They said anywhere except Waterloo, Iowa. GM will introduce a new color for next year's models, Sacre Bleu. And from here on out, passenger headroom will be referred to as beret space. All navigation systems will be voiced by Jerry Lewis. Hey, lady, turn left. Tachometers built by the French will count one revolution every 200 years. And finally, the must-have option for next year will be what? Buick's new in-dash fondue pot. Well, look, we'll keep an eye on this for you, so stay tuned for further developments. But in the meantime, we'll talk to you about your GM car or your Peugeot or whatever. Anything else you want to talk about, we're ready for it. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kat calling from Seattle.
Kat with a C or a K?
With a K.
Okay, just checking. What's going on, Kat from Seattle?
Okay, I drive my boyfriend's 2002 Pontiac Grand Prix.
Uh-huh.
And about a month ago, I drove over a speed bump, and I took it maybe a little too fast.
What, 50?
Not quite 50.
Did the sign say slow 10 miles an hour or something like that?
It says 10 miles an hour, but it was early in the morning, and no one was around.
Including you.
So I went over and I kind of felt or heard what maybe was the suspension bottoming out or some kind of clunk.
Oh, it bottomed out all right.
I came up to the next speed bump and the whole car just made this awful noise that was kind of like,
And where was it coming from? Middle, back?
The front.
And it was making this noise cyclically?
Anytime I go over a bump.
Oh, when you go over a bump. So
I went over the next speed. There were two speed bumps in a row.
Did you go over the next one at 50 miles an hour as well?
No, I took it down a notch.
Took it down to what notch?
So I probably took the first one at like 35, and then the second one I took it down to like 15.
Okay, so it means you took the first one at 55 and the next one at 45. Okay, so now that we know the facts. And the noise again is,
It's kind of like a donkey noise.
Yeah.
Like
And it's that long?
It's just like, you know, like.
Yeah, it's for the duration of the bump. And if you isolated it to one wheel or another, for example, if you were to go over a bump with just the right front wheel, is that where the noise is coming from? We're trying to determine if you ruined both McPherson struts in the front or just one.
I don't know if I've ever gone over a bump with only one wheel, but it also is when it turns.
Okay.
So, like, if I was just parked and then turned my wheel, it would go like ee.
So do you want the whole list of all the things you could have broken, or you want just like the top 10?
I just want to know if I have to fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do have to
There's
fix
no it. Question about it.
Yeah, and what's likely is that you broke what's called the strut mount. And that is the piece that's on the very top of the McPherson strut. That actually mounts it to basically the fender.
Uh-huh.
You could also have broken the spring. You could have damaged the McPherson strut shock absorber. Those are the three things that come to mind immediately. And you could have done it on both sides.
Oh, my goodness. goodness.
Well, the car's the right the car's the right age to need struts anyway, and they were on their last legs. This is like if you had a 95-year-old grandfather and you decided to take him out and play tackle football with him. You'd pretty much finish the old guy off. You know, so this is a car that should have been...
So it wasn't entirely my fault. It was coming as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was your fault. But we love you anyway. I mean, it does. You know, everybody makes mistakes. You know, I teamed up with my brother. I
mean, yeah, I made that mistake.
You know, so I think that, you know, you have to just own up to it. And you have to take it some. By the way, this has the potential to be dangerous because if, in fact, the mounts are broken, then the struts can come disconnected from the body of the car.
You got to have it fixed right away.
Yeah.
So
go someplace, and they'll probably sell you a kit which consists of the whole thing. It'll be the strut, the spring, and the mount.
Okay.
But you should fess up to it. Whoever you take it to should know all the whole story. Just like you told us, except you can really tell the truth to that person because no one else will be listening. All right?
Okay.
Kat, good luck. And it's obvious you've been driving like my brother, so stop it. See you later.
Thank you.
All right, bye. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy is right.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm Cynthia from Newcastle, California. And I have a 1987 Vanagon, and I keep having all kinds of different problems with it. I use this Vanagon to transport my swimming goats, and they were they're Nigerian.
Whoa! Say that again.
You have an 87 Vanagon, and you transport your what goats?
My swimming goats.
Swimming goats.
What's a swimming goat?
Well, because of the fact that I live on country property and I've got an acre-sized pond, I was afraid when they were babies that if they fell in, they would drown.
Yeah.
So I just taught them how to swim, and it's become a thing that we do.
And do these goats, do they do, like, synchronized swimming? Or do they? what kind of swimming do they do? Do they do any strokes besides the old breaststroke?
They can do it in tandem, and they swim with me.
And
they're very proud. They're very proud little swimmers.
Wow. So do these goats, how old are these goats?
Well, there's one that's 8, and I've had him since he was 3 weeks old.
Ah.
And then there's another one that is 6, and then I have one that is 1 year old.
Huh, really?
So
okay,
you know.
I'm confused because I forgot what you called us for.
No, I just have a couple of more questions. Did you teach them to not pee in the pool?
You know what? It was really interesting. I was at a party, and this pool, their pool, was behind the hill, so no adults were around. And my little Scotty, he got in. And no, they do not. He did not pee or poop in the pool.
Well, that's good. I'm encouraged to hear that. Anyway, Cynthia, yeah, Tommy did have a valid question. What do you want?
Okay, well, I have this 87 Vanagon, and I keep having little problems with it. I love it because it's the perfect thing to transport my goats.
Ah.
And the problem is this car, it keeps breaking down. I need another vehicle. I never buy any car brand new.
Yeah.
But something maybe 5 to 10 years old. They do their peeing and their pooping before they get in the car. They know the routine. But if I'm in there any longer than about a half an hour, they'll have an accident.
Ah.
I'd like them in the cab. They want to be in the cab with us.
Why, what are they, like, changing the stations on the radio? What? I mean, most farm animals, with all due respect, ride
actually,
in the back of the truck.
Actually, one of them poked the radio button the other day and turned the radio off. So, yes, they do
change the station. So you want
sometimes they push on that little gear and they stick it in something else. They've done that, too.
Yeah, that could be a little dangerous. I would try to restrain them from getting to the controls, for sure. But if you want something that allows them to be in the same compartment with you, then any of the vans will do. I mean, you can get yourself a late model, you know, Dodge Caravan or...
But they're dark. You know, the Vanagon's got a whole bunch of windows.
Oh, no, they have all windows, too. All those have windows. The Dodge Caravans, the Honda Odysseys, the Toyota Siennas, they all have glass all around.
It doesn't look like they're as open as the Vanagon. You
know, the Vanagon does have that big South America-sized window in the back.
And it's bigger than those other, because we also transport 2 dogs with them, too.
Oh.
So you guys are almost like a full-fledged circus at this point. I think you should measure the glass area of some of the vehicles under consideration. I think you'll find out that they're pretty close.
Yeah, they look so much smaller.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're that much smaller. And what you're really concerned about is the floor area, obviously.
Yes.
You know, but if you go to Dodge Grand Caravan, I've got to think it's got more room in it than this thing.
A Dodge Grand Caravan. All right, I will check that out.
And it may not be everything you want, but you may just fall in love with it. And you know what it's going to have? Reliability.
Yeah. See, that's the problem. I love the fact that I've got this pop-up table and everything, but there's too many things.
What do the goats do? Play cards?
You know, I'll take them somewhere and sit because I'm right next to a pretty large state park.
Oh.
And there's no sign that says dog. There's a sign that says
no
dog
dogs allowed. Say nothing about goats.
nothing about goats.
Nothing about
Cynthia,
goats.
You are a very interesting person. It's been a joy speaking with you.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you
good
for
luck.
Your help.
All right. See you later.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Bye
bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
This is Dave
from Fairfield, Connecticut.
Hey, Dave.
I have a 1993 Ford Escort station wagon.
Do you really?
Oh, it's a classic. It's a stick shift. We bought it new, brought the kids home from the hospital in it, and just can't seem to get rid of it.
So you want us to arrange that for you or what?
Well... Actually, there's a big sentimental attachment.
Sure.
Well, I got to tell you, when this car came out, I actually loved this car. I thought it was one of Ford's best small car efforts.
Well, we've loved it. It drives like a top.
Has this been your only car all these years?
No, we migrated up. We got some minivans, and we're driving a Pilot now. We have three cars.
Ah.
My in-laws think that we're crazy to keep this. They keep looking at me. Like, uh-huh. It's a waste of money, but we, you know.
Do you stand to inherit a lot of money from these in-laws? Because you may want to do whatever they want.
You know, no, I don't think so.
Oh, but all of them then.
Well, you know, I want to please my in-laws, but I have to be careful to draw the line somewhere.
Exactly right. So what's the issue with this thing?
So the problem is, when you drive it for, like, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes, during the spring and summer, this is not a winter problem,
uh-huh.
It starts to drip some kind of oil down on your leg.
Oh.
My wife discovered this about a year ago, and she was complaining to me, so I got in and tried it out. And sure enough, I got oil all over my pant leg, and it's just about the ankle.
Which leg?
It's typically the left leg.
I would say left leg probably close to the knee. Oh, no, actually lower down, halfway down the leg.
It might be. I know that it gets down around the cuff, and it makes a mess.
Do you think?
So I put a piece of plywood up in there. So I've got a sort of a temporary fix, but I took it into our mechanic, who's a great people. We love them. And they looked at it, and they said, we never saw anything like this before.
Oh, they're too young. How old are these mechanics?
Oh, they're, well, I don't know, mid-50s maybe.
Oh, they're too stupid.
First time ever they said to me, "This we don't really know what this is." They said it's engine oil coming out of the steering column is what they said, and it's going to be really expensive to fix, and it's not worth it. So they kind of turned their back on it. So I'm not quite sure what to do. I have this sentimental attachment, and I'm wondering, should I just keep driving with the plywood in, or should I get it fixed?
Well, you should get it fixed, and the fix is actually pretty easy, because the oil is not oil. In fact, it's transmission oil.
Oh.
This car has the old-fashioned kind of speedometer that's driven by a cable, actually, that has one end into the transmission in a gear at that end of the cable. But in order to keep the oil that's in the transmission in there, there's a seal at that bottom end, and your seal is faulty.
So what's happening
is that cable and its housing are acting as a conduit for the fluid and carrying it right as that cable turns, it's carrying that fluid right up to your leg. So you can start wearing shorts. Or roll your pant leg up.
Yeah. Save all those pants.
With dark socks.
Okay.
So you need to take it to a transmission shop and tell them what's happening, and they'll put a new seal in there for you.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
My heroes.
Who?
Yeah, and when you're ready to get rid of this beauty, donate it to your NPR station. I'm sure someone is going to be in love with this car, just like you've been.
Next year, it's going to be an antique soon.
Then you're never going to get rid of it.
Yeah, it's going to go right in the museum. Hey, thank you guys very much.
All right, David, our pleasure. Take care, man.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Boy, oh, boy.
Oh, boy. All right. Think back. Do you remember anything at all about last week's puzzle?
Yes, I do. Because, as a matter of fact,
I don't.
It was avian in nature, if I remember correctly.
Ooh.
And it had to do with flight patterns. What? You look shocked. What?
I am. I'm shocked that you actually remembered a puzzler. My world has been turned upside down. Everything is twisted now.
Don't worry. I just peeked at your notes before the show.
Oh, man. I feel better. Anyway, you scared me for a minute. Yes, the puzzler was about a bird feeder.
It was?
And the flight patterns of the birds. And we'll be back with the whole story in just a minute.
Stay away from my Pinto. Gas tank's in the rear. The Vega motor done melted down, and my Omni I can't steer. Firestone 500's got me crying in my beer. And every time I shut the door, when my Ford goes into gear. Take this car and junk it, I can't use it anymore. The hood flies up, the trunk won't lock, and I can't shut the door. I wish someone would tell me what I bought the darn thing for. Take this car and junk it, I can't use it anymore. Well, my battery, it ain't got no spark, and my wipers, they don't wipe. Fan belt slips on this whole car, and my tail, it ain't got no pipe. Generator, just won't gin, the radiator just goes hiss. The carburetor, it just won't carb, and the pistons, they don't work.
And even though Scott Simon puts his fingers in his ears and chants his stress reduction mantra whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hello. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk.
Hello?
With us.
What was that? Is this the BBC?
Yes, we have a lot of British folks who are listening of late, and I thought I'd...
Hello. I like it.
Anyway, we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
Mm.
And this puzzler was sent in by someone named Bill Denlinger, and he writes, my cousin Bruno put up a bird feeder in the yard. It was nothing fancy, just basically a flat board with raised edges, kind of like a shallow cigar box with the lid, of course, removed. Would have been mean for the birds to have a lid
cover
on. Anyway, as Bruno sat in his recliner in the living room watching the birds come and go, he noticed an interesting thing. On some days, the birds would fly into the feeder from the north. On other days, they would fly in from the south. And on other days, they seemed to fly in from all different directions. The birds weren't tagged in any way, and he didn't know anything about birds. He had no way of knowing, but they appeared to Bruno to be the same birds, right? I mean, well, birds, a bird is a bird,
yeah.
Right? But he wondered why the birds didn't fly into the feeder from the same direction all the time. I mean, they must have a house someplace.
Well, was it different days of the week? Maybe one day they're coming home from work. If it's the weekend, they don't go to work.
Oh.
They fly off in different directions on vacation.
Oh, maybe they're at the gym another day.
At the gym another day?
Hadn't thought of that.
Bruno didn't think of it either.
He didn't seem to think of it. Anyway, he couldn't explain it, just like us, until one day he noticed something while he was out filling up the feeder. And he said, aha. What did he notice?
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Did it have to do with wind?
He noticed that the wind was blowing, exactly. And just like when you come into a landing at an airport, you fly into the wind to land. The birds do the same thing, too.
When they
try to fly with the wind at their backs, they miss the bird feeder altogether.
They come down, they trip over the end of the thing, fall down on the ground.
So, over millions of years, birds have learned to land flying into the wind.
No kidding.
Yeah, and if the wind is blowing from the north, they're flying in from the south. And, of course, on the days when it isn't windy.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. So it was the same birds. And Bruno figured it out one day when he was out there and it blew off his toupee. Anyway, who's our winner?
Well, the winner is Larry Barton from Kettering, Ohio. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Larry will get, of course, the $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division.
I hope Larry doesn't have a heart attack or anything. You know, it'd be like waking Ned Devine. They're going to have to pretend that he's still alive to get this $26 out of us. I mean, this...
Lucky Larry.
This could be very stressful winning this.
Imagine if you're just sitting there in your living room watching the birds go to the bird feeder, and someone says, the winner this week is Larry Barton, and it's you. You could forward off your chair.
And you didn't even send in an answer.
We just picked these names at random.
Oh, God. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So what does Larry get for it with his $26 gift certificate?
Well, I started to say, with that $26 gift certificate, he can pick up a copy of our 4-CD set called Four Perfectly Good Hours. This set features four of our favorite shows exactly as they aired on NPR.
Oh, yes.
Or all kinds of other stuff, T-shirts, coffee
hats,
makers,
Bronco Nagurski, long underwear, and of course
pianos,
now bird feeders,
down payment on a piano. That was 750 more payments, and we'll give you the keyboard.
Anyway, we have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show, so don't touch that dial. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car, give us a call. The number is 888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Dan from Oakland, California.
Hey, Dan.
Oakland.
What's going on, man?
Well, I have a 2000 Volvo Cross Country, and I'm having a debate with my wife about it, and I could really use your advice.
Oh.
Let me tell you the story. About 9 years ago, my wife was pregnant, and we were living in Vermont at the time. And one cold night, she woke me and said, I'm ready to have this baby. So we jumped in the Volvo, but only made it halfway to the hospital, about 50 miles away. When she screamed at me, I'm having this baby. You've got to pull over.
Those are the words that every man wants to hear. We're not going to make it to the hospital.
Boy, my blood runs cold as I think about it. But I called 911, and it became clear pretty fast that an ambulance was not going to arrive in time.
Oh.
So my dear wife, believe it or not, had to give birth in the front seat of the Volvo. And guys, fortunately, I caught the baby before he hit the floor.
Yeah, that was good, Dan.
Yeah, I'm not much of a baseball player, but I caught our dear son. So fast forward 9 years, he's a healthy redhead, and his nickname is Carson. Get it?
Carson, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
But now we've got a dilemma. My dear wife, Carol, has convinced me that we have to sell the birthmobile. I think we should pull out the very special seat where Carson was born so he can, you know.
It's going to be tough to sell it with a missing seat.
Well, but I think he should have it in his bedroom. You know, I think he should take it off to college someday. But my wife, of course, thinks I'm nuts.
Well, there aren't many kids who are born in the front seat of a car, that's for sure. So obviously you can't sell the car with a seat missing.
Exactly.
So you can go to a junkyard. I know it's important for you to have this exact seat, but you're going to go to a junkyard and you're going to find an exact match. And
yeah,
I wouldn't even swap them. I would just give the son the one from the junkyard and say, here you go, kid.
Well, yeah, maybe he wouldn't know the difference, huh?
No, but you would. No, it's going to be the actual one. So you're going to have to unbolt it and plug in the new one.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's not going to be cheap, and there may be some legal issues. Because this car has an airbag that's built into the seat back.
Oh.
Okay, and there may be some prohibitions about selling the used seat because you can't buy a used airbag.
Yeah.
So that may be a pro. So you have to research this a little bit.
Wow, had not thought of that.
Well, what you could do, Dan, is you could buy the whole seat and leave the original seat back there and just change the cushion. The business part of the seat, the part that he was born onto.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? I see that I'm looking in the booth here at our engineer and our assistants. Everyone's making faces and they're getting squeamish. I think we're going to have a couple of hurlers in here in a minute.
Well, wait. So this was quite a ride, literally. So the ambulance attendant, my wife doesn't have much of a memory of this, but one of them is the ambulance attendant.
No kidding.
Remember, she's still connected to the baby as they put her in the ambulance, and the attendant back there says, oh, let me cut the cord. I took a class over the weekend, and he pulls out a razor blade as they're going 80 miles per hour. It was quite a ride.
You didn't bite through the cord, man?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm only so tough.
So how I'm curious, how were you in the immediate aftermath of this? How long did it take you to stop trembling?
Well, I should tell you, while I'm a lawyer by training, I'm the son of an obstetrician who delivered about 10,000 babies.
Oh, so you must know how to do it, because you probably heard all those dinner table discussions, of course. Right.
All the stories around the dinner table. No, I was shaken pretty badly. It was a scary moment, but it all turned out great.
Well, I got a funny feeling that you're going to acquiesce to your wife's wishes on this. But if you can pull it off, buy yourself a cushion at the bottom part of the seat, change that over, leave the seat back where the airbag is, leave that intact, and you might be good to go.
That sounds great.
And then, of course, you can reassemble. You'll have a whole seat with a seat back from the junkyard that you're not using and the seat cushion from the original, delivery. And you can you can now have a whole seat, only half of which will really be the seat. But no one has to know that, right?
Yeah, he doesn't have to know that. That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Good luck.
All right.
Good luck.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Send us a photo.
All right.
See you, Dan.
Bye-bye.
Doesn't anyone screen these calls? 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Lisa, and I'm calling from Old Forge, New York.
Old Forge. Yeah, where
it's in the Adirondack Mountains.
I knew you knew that.
Yeah.
What's happening, Lisa?
Well, I drive a 2007 Toyota FJ Cruiser, and recently I was on my way to work, and driving down the road, lightning struck my car.
Get out!
Really?
Yeah. It was interesting.
Now, what were the first two words out of your mouth when the lightning hit? Come on, you can. No one's listening. Yeah. You can say whatever you want. Was one of them the first one holy?
You know, for once, the first time in my whole life, I was speechless.
Really? So lightning. Wow. You're driving along, and
yes.
did the thing light up? What happened?
Well, it was a flash flood situation. So I was in a puddle, and the lightning didn't actually strike the car exactly. It struck next to me or into the water, and I just felt it from my tires up all the way through the car, like started at my feet and went all the way up through the whole car.
Really?
Wow.
And so what doesn't work now?
Well, at first, the headlights, I have them so that they are programmed to automatically come on when I turn the key in the ignition, and then they go off 90 seconds afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And they kind of went on and off whenever they would want to.
Oh.
But that seems to straighten itself out, and the radio doesn't work all the time.
And that's it?
My main concern is, I mean, those are the couple of things that I know. What else should I be looking for or have a garage look for to see if something happened?
Well, I'd be looking for my fire extinguisher just in case the thing bursts into flames. Yeah, who the heck knows? I would guess the headlight thing. Is that corrected itself now, or is it okay or not?
Yes. What I did was I disconnected the battery terminals and let everything reset itself.
There you go.
Good.
So what are you worried about?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything that I have to. I mean, to me, lightning is a big power surge, and I know that, like, if you get a power surge in your home, your appliances or whatever don't necessarily fail at the time of the power surge.
Oh no, but I think if it's big enough, lots of things would have failed.
Right.
And,
okay.
And you'd be asking for the number of hair club for women.
Oh, you should have seen my hair. Oh, my.
Oh, really? Did you have a bad hair day after that?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh.
My hair is very straight, and it was extremely big and curly after that.
Really? Did you take a picture of yourself?
No.
Oh, my God. You missed
it. I was kind of shook up after getting hit by the lightning.
Ah, come on, a little lightning. Never hurt. So have you avoided this section of road since then?
No, I live almost at the end of a dirt road, and it's a dead end.
Well, you know what they say.
So I have to turn around there every morning.
Lightning never strikes twice, does it?
Well, exactly. I have nothing else to worry about.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know even what tests can be done. I mean, the headlight thing was probably the body control module that affects that.
But okay.
I think you did the right thing, and I don't think you got a big enough jolt to really do anything. It just was kind of like a transient wave that was enough to throw things off, but not enough to cook anything.
Good.
That's what I think. Of course,
good.
I'm making this up. you know, but
you know, she made me feel better, so then
I know, and I'm sure
sounds good though.
It does sound good, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a transient. Always sounds good.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, it was a transient energy form, and I wouldn't be too worried about it. But I'm sure somebody, some astute listener, and we still have a lot of astute listeners out there, will be able to either corroborate or more likely refute what I just said.
Okay.
And so you should be tuned into our website to find out who, in fact, has a better answer than mine or Tommy's.
I can't imagine there is one.
No, I can't either, but you'd be surprised. good luck, Lisa. Just be on the safe side. You should probably wear a helmet or something from now on.
Well, thank you for the advice.
All right, take care.
Call it advice.
See you later. Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, Tom and Ray. This is Paul from Acton, Mass.
Hey, Paul. What's going on?
Well, a couple weeks ago, my brother-in-law helped me change the front brake pads and rotors on my wife's minivan. And so I'm feeling really kind of confident about auto repair now. So I think I can do anything.
You're ready for an engine rebuild, right?
just about. But the issue I have right now is I have a 2003 Toyota RAV4, and its front brakes are making a clunking sound when I push the pedal down.
Okay, so you're driving at any speed? What speed do you have to be going to get this?
I usually hear it when I'm driving slowly, you know, when I'm just kind of pulling out of the driveway or, you know, coming to stops at the stop sign or kind of stop-and-go traffic. I hear this kind of clunk when I push the brake in, and then also sometimes when I lift it off.
Okay.
And so I'm hoping to figure out what it is, and if that's something that, with my newfound knowledge of brakes, I can repair myself.
Well, I think it stands to reason that all repairs can go through the brake portal. You know, so whatever it is, it's wrong. You can start with the brakes and work your way up from there. You may have a bad ball joint, for example, or a bad tie rod end. Okay, so those things can cause that same kind of clunking because they change the acceleration of the vehicle.
I don't know, ball joints and tie rod ends sounds a little bit difficult.
No, but we can tell that you're champing at the bit to do another brake job. I think you should do it anyway. What the heck?
Might as well, right?
Well, here's what you should do. I think there's a small chance that it's the brakes. And if that's the case, yippee.
Yeah.
But just to be on the safe side, maybe you take it to your repair shop. You didn't fire him yet, did you?
No, not yet. Pink slip was ready, but
Yeah. Well, keep on the payroll a while longer, and you should go to that repair shop and at least have them check it out to find out if there's anything dangerous going on, and if it is a ball joint or a tie rod end, you may decide that you don't want to do this, but you may want to say, look, can I hang around and watch you do it so I'll be able to do it the next time and save myself some money, or you decide to just take the plunge and give it a shot. What gave you the courage to do the brake job?
Well, my brother-in-law said that I could. You know, I'm a computer guy, so I hadn't really had much experience with this stuff. But he said, "Oh no, it's easy. You just got to pull this thing out and stick it in there." And so I did it, and it really actually seemed easy. My wife didn't believe it.
Did he stand by your side, her brother, when you did this?
Oh yeah.
Oh, so he can be your teacher for the next job, for the tie rod end job.
Definitely.
Yeah, why not? But take it someplace. You don't want to have to rely on him. I don't know how much he knows.
Yeah, he's not an expert car mechanic.
He's an expert. He knows a little more than you.
Yeah.
So take
one
it some.
One of those experts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we do. You know, a little more than our callers. So take the thing someplace, get it checked out, make sure it's safe. And if it isn't safe, at least you'll find out what it is. If it's a job that you think you and your brother-in-law can tackle, go for it.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
All right, Paul. See you later, man.
Bye.
This guy's going to get himself in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he's dying to fix stuff. Your next thing you know, he's going to have that 6,000 piece Snap-on toolkit in his garage. Why not? Hey, look, it's time to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have this week's brand new puzzler.
Ooh, I can hardly wait.
You no good lion sack. But I do appreciate the effort. Anyway, the new puzzler is from my Games of Chance series, and we'll be back with that and more of your car questions in just a minute.
He had a handsome smile, soon to be 19. A 68 GTO, and it was fast and green. Had a four on the floor, and a Pioneer stereo. Well, I really wasn't old enough to drive, and if my daddy would have caught me, he'd have skinned me alive. But I knew I just had to go in that GTO.
Lord, it brings back a smile from such a long time ago. Never went to the prom, we never made it to the show. You say, do I miss that boy? Well, no, but I miss that GTO.
And even though the NPR landscaper takes a long, hard look at his wood chipper whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Yeah. Games of Chance, you said.
Yes, exactly that. And this came to us from Frank DeRisi, and you ready? Just pay attention now.
Yeah.
Because I know this is right up your alley, man.
Go ahead.
Lotteries and the folks who play them are an interesting study. You know, there are lots of players who are superstitious and won't ever consider playing the number 13. And there are others who insist on playing the number 13 all the time. Lots of people, for example, play their kids' birthdays. So some strategists would play only numbers over 31, okay, hoping to share with as few others as possible if and when they win.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no birthdays beyond the 31st of a month. Okay? Some people play every week. In fact, most lottery players play every week. And my friend Giovanni is no exception. Now, Giovanni lives in Italy, and he plays the lotto every week. And the lotto in Italy is similar to any other. It has 60 numbers, 6-0, and you must pick 5 to win, 5 out of 60.
Yeah.
Not really good odds, but that's what it is. Anyway, I'm out one day with Giovanni driving around in his car, and he's listening to his favorite radio station, mostly because he likes the music they play, but also because this station will broadcast the winning numbers, not live from lottery headquarters or anything like that, but whenever they have a minute or two between songs or when they remember to do it, they'll announce the numbers. Anyway, here we are driving along, and the announcer begins to read the winning numbers. After the first winning number is announced, Giovanni begins screaming, blowing his horn, shouting out, "Ho vinto, ho vinto, I won, I won," and weaving in and out of traffic, okay? And he hadn't even heard the other four numbers. The question is, why doesn't he need to hear the other numbers to be read? How does he know that he won? He heard one number, and he's won the lottery.
Oh.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a Griffin Hilo TC toy helicopter with dual rotors, infrared controls, flight plan storage, LED headlights, and most importantly, two onboard missile launchers so I can launch plastic missiles at my brother whenever he says something stupid. On second thought, better throw in a boatload of extra missiles and send it all over to Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
You can indeed. And if you have a question for us now, give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Roger, and I'm 17 miles east of Salida, Colorado.
Hi, Roger. How you doing?
Well, got a little problem on my hands. I got a 2000 Ford Ranger pickup that I bought brand new. And it ran terrific, never had a problem with it, and then until I screwed it all up.
What'd you do, man?
Huh. Okay, I had to change the battery, and I put the battery in backwards.
Oh! Oh. Oh. Why'd you do that?
Well, I was drunk, I don't know.
Yeah, it happens.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
Did it spark like? How did you know you'd put it in backwards? What happened?
Okay, what happened was I did not start the vehicle. You know, I hooked up the battery. I hooked it up backwards, and this high-pitched whine started coming out from somewhere under the hood. I don't know where exactly, but I spotted what I did immediately and unplugged it. Hooked it back up correctly, and I found a couple of burn fuses. I replaced all those, and it starts. It runs fine, but I'm getting no charging current to the battery now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you probably burned out the alternator.
Well, that's what I've been told, but I've been all over the Internet looking at the problem, and they say there's circuitry in place that would protect that in case that happened. They said to look for a mega fuse next to the fuse box under the hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that did blow.
Oh, good.
Okay. But I temporarily jump it, and I still get no current.
And you know what? Before that fuse blew, I think that's when you cook the alternator. So here's what you can do. You could take the alternator out and take it to a shop. You know, some of the parts places have a bench where they can test the alternator.
Okay.
Okay, and they say, oh, this thing is putting out nothing. And I'm guessing that they're going to tell you exactly that. This alternator is putting out nothing. And I think what you heard when you hooked it up backwards, you probably heard the diode bridge getting fried.
Okay.
I mean, you may have burned other wires, too. So you might want to start ripping apart the harness that runs off of the alternator.
Well, yeah, I have done that, and I don't see anything cooked on it at all.
Yeah, so I think whatever's cooked is probably inside the alternator. But if you can find a shop that can test this thing for you, you can either take it out and take the thing there, or you can just drive the vehicle to a shop and they'll test it and verify that there's no output coming. Well, you know there's nothing coming out of the alternator, but you just don't know if the alternator's bad or if there's some other wiring that's bad.
Exactly.
So I think the best place to start is to find out that the alternator's no good.
That sounds great, and I appreciate it.
And next time, don't put the battery in the dark.
You know, okay.
I mean, everyone's done that, and I know I've hooked up jumper cables backwards a few times.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what? I thought, you know, I'm probably the only guy in the world who's ever done this, and when I went on the
internet, my brother's done it a few times.
I found out millions of people have done this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a favorite pastime. Oh, yeah. And it should be a law that every battery is much more clearly marked. I mean, why is it that the top of the battery is black, and they stamp a little black plus sign and a little black minus sign that you can't see.
You can't see.
Unless it's
dark.
In bright daylight. And you know your battery never goes dead in bright daylight. It always goes dead in the middle of the night. And they could the terminals could be different sizes, so you can't screw it up. There are a lot of things they could do, but they don't. And we're happy that they don't, because it allows us to, you know, take care of jobs of knuckleheads like you that hooked it up backwards. But you'll be all right. Get that alternator out of there and get it tested.
Okay, that sounds great. That'll be my next move.
All right. Okay. See you, Roger.
Thank you very much.
All right. Oh, boy. Isn't that an awful feeling, though, when you worse than that, if you smell something melting, see the sparks. Flames are always scary, too.
Mm.
Yeah.
I know it well.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hi, I'm Liz from Alexandria, Virginia.
Hi, Liz from Alexandria. What's
happening? As in Elizabeth?
Yes, but my father liked Elizabeth Taylor, so he always called me Liz.
Oh, yes, indeed. And where are you from, Alexandria, you said?
Uh-huh, just outside Washington, D.C.
Yeah. What's going on, Liz?
Well, I have a 2002 Subaru Outback, and I was kind of thinking of selling it, but then the check engine light went on. So I took it, and they told me to replace the catalytic converter. So we did that, but I didn't want to replace it with the Subaru part because I'm getting ready to sell the car. So he put in this aftermarket part, and he fixed it, and it ran great until...
The light came back on.
Yeah, 3 days later on my way down to Florida.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So when we got back from Florida, I brought it to him. He checked the light. He said the computer said it was a catalytic converter, but that it sounded good, and it was probably burning in.
I don't think so.
So he turned the light off, and 2 days later, the light went back on again. So now I don't know what to do.
Well, it's not going to burn in. We have had problems with lots of cars, and especially Subarus, oddly enough, where we have bought aftermarket converters that did exactly this. They didn't convert enough. And so what happens is the computer sees that via the oxygen sensor and sets what's called a CAT efficiency code. In other words, the CAT isn't working well enough or efficiently enough to satisfy the computer, and it'll turn the light on. And the reason it's doing that is because this is, what do you call it, cheap junk. And we've had luck putting...
You just beat me by a
second. Yeah, it's, you know, and that doesn't mean that this same manufacturer couldn't make one that might work on another car all right. But we've had a lot of problems with aftermarket converters. And the attraction is they're a heck of a lot cheaper. So what did you pay for this thing?
I paid about $600 all in the car, and it was less than half price of what it would have been for the car.
Yeah, the other one would have cost you like $1,400 with the parts and the labor, but it would have worked. So when this doesn't work, what does he propose he's going
to
do?
Well, the last I spoke to him, it was burning in. So I have to take it back to him, but I kind of wanted to know whether that was like a made-up thing before I did. And also, I guess the ethical thing is, like, I don't want to sell the car if this part is dangerous or it's really not doing the job.
Well, it's not doing the job. It's not dangerous. The car is not going to catch fire or anything unless he can get to it some night when it's parked in your driveway. But what you'd like him to do is refund you, or credit you, rather, the $600 that you spent for this and put that toward the real one.
Okay.
So you're going to have to fork over another $800.
Right.
You're not going to pay for the labor again, because that's his problem that he put this thing in. Or did he give you the choice? Did he say you can do either one?
Yeah, he said, I said, I'm getting ready to sell the car, so I don't need a catalytic converter to last me another 12 years.
He said about 12 days.
He said it should be good for 1 to 4 years, not 1 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So now you have to ask him, what does he think he's going to do? And a good guy will just credit you the $600, put it towards the price he was going to charge you for the other one. He'll return the $600 one, and he'll eat the labor.
Oh, you know, and also it goes clangety-clang now, too.
What goes clangety-clang? The new converter?
Well, the car. Well, underneath the car, it goes gang-gang-gang-gang-gang-gang-gang when I start the car at low speeds.
Oh, it's probably it's hitting the undercarriage. And some of those aftermarket ones don't fit very well either.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll buy it and spend the money.
You tried to be a cheapskate.
I did.
I know. Everyone tries it. My brother's been trying it for about 100 years. Look what it's done to him. Anyway, go back and get the right one.
All right. Thank you.
See you, Liz. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See, you know the old adage, it's the lazy man who works the hardest.
It's the
cheapest person that spends the most. She's going to end off spending more than $1,400 because he's going to say, oh, I'm not going to eat that labor. You're the one who wanted it. Anyway,
what can you do?
Let's ruin someone else's day. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Scott, and I'm calling in from San Diego. And I basically need some help from you guys convincing my wife that she's crazy.
Okay.
I'm not so sure we want to do that.
Let's hear the evidence.
You tell us what's going on.
Okay. The situation is we've been a one-car family for some time. And, you know, I work full-time and I'm in school, so it's really hectic, you know, running all over the place. And we have two kids, so that adds to it. So with the gas prices as high as they are, her solution is that she should buy a high-powered motorcycle and somehow bolt onto it a sidecar big enough to carry a 12-year-old and a 6-year-old.
She's out of her mind! What is she, nuts?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I thought of when I heard this was Batman and Robin, right?
Right, exactly.
I saw this.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
So you have a 12-year-old and a 6-year-old?
That's right.
And she wants to have dual sidecars. Or a sidecar.
Big one, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they make a double.
Okay.
Yeah, they call it a doppio, like doppio slap. My God. So and she thinks that she's going to be able to tool around San Diego. There's a fair amount of traffic in San Diego.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah. And of course, the weather is conducive to having a vehicle like this.
We're also sort of assuming that the motorcycle sidecar option would save on gas compared to, you know, some kind of more traditional thing.
Well, but motorcycles aren't so great. Aren't as great as one thinks when it comes to gasoline, considering their limitations. So what might you get with this motorcycle? 50 miles to the gallon?
Uh-huh.
Okay, but you can buy a lot of cars, like a Honda Civic, for example, or a Fiat, or the new Mazda 3, and you can get 40 miles to the gallon.
Okay.
So there are lots. So if it's mileage you're thinking about, I wouldn't be too worried about that.
There's also the persuasive factor of being able to wear aviator goggles and a big white scarf, I think.
Oh, that.
Uh-huh.
Maybe she would be satisfied with a convertible. Maybe that might do it. That might be a good compromise.
There you go.
Yeah.
Be a little safer, you know?
A little bit. What did your wife do before you were married? Was she in the circus or anything like that?
She hasn't told me about it.
She hasn't told you about it. So what did she tell you she did do?
She's been a mild-mannered, teacher and working in higher ed. Nothing too outrageous that would raise any red flags.
No, I think this motorcycle raised a red flag for me. Yeah, so you should be careful. Well, on the other hand, you know, she's going to do something crazy. But you'd just as soon have her do it without the kids.
There is that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, unfortunately, the car that I kind of fell in love with is not going to be big enough for your kids. The Fiat 500.
Uh-huh.
because it really doesn't have an adequate back seat.
Yeah.
But it is fun to drive on. If you got the one with the roll-back top, that's a heck of a lot of fun. So she's going to have to look for some other, maybe larger convertible, maybe a Volkswagen or something.
Got it. So I can confidently cite the authority of Tom and Ray when I explain to her that she's out of her mind?
Yes.
Okay.
Tell them they were rather solemn and solemnic when you spoke to them. And,
yes.
And they said, she's nuts!
Oh. That sounds good.
Well, good luck, Scott.
All right.
Take it easy, man.
You too, thanks.
All right. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, look, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Flau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mayor, assisted by Connie Britchford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Kara McKnight. And our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Terre Haute Curried Goat, Root Beer Float, Gravy Boat, Fruit Compote, Party Boat, quote-unquote belly bloat, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our marriage counselor is Marion Haste. Our TSA screener is Pat Matukas. Our Russian Marine product tester is Ivana Nujetsky. Our collection agent is you effing well better. Tom's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our Working Mother Support Group, of course, is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is you, Lewis Dewey, known to the birds in Harvard Square who fly north, see us, and turn around and fly south again as Huey, Louie, Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Please don't drive like my brother.
Please don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1217, download a bunch of classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, it's spring cleaning time for your car.
Which in my brother's case is usually a mulch and reseeding. But if you've got a car that's worth cleaning, check out the discussion at cartalk.com where visitors have been sharing their car cleaning tips.
Is fire one of those tips?
In your case, yes. Check out your fellow listeners' best car cleaning tips right now over at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Kyle Castle sits back and wonders how far he could stretch his Social Security check in Honduras whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.